Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the awesomest show that's on the internet. And I keep saying that because it definitely is, in my view anyway, and a couple of people's view. You know, maybe not the whole world thinks it yet, but they'll catch on. Anyway, welcome back to the Oversharing Show. We have a guest today, and we're going to get into that. But before we do, we are going to do what we always do and read a quote to start the show. And then Sharon's going to pull a card. And then I believe Gordy's going to pull some cards too. So it's pretty exciting. Here's our quote. An ignorant person is inclined to blame others for his own misfortune. To blame oneself is proof of progress. But the wise may never have a blame. but the wise man never has to blame another or himself. And that is by Epictetus. Epictetus? Did I say that
Epictetus.
Right?
Epictetus.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I did send you that.
Yeah. I love that last part. There's nobody to blame because it's all perfect. Just because I crashed in your car, sir. The world's perfect. You don't need to call the cops. Anyway, what's up, Sharon?
The Six of Discs, which is Pentacles. I don't think I've seen this card before. Both deck, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Ooh, the world. You just showed us the world.
The world. Oh, that was the
universe. Yes. Anyway, yeah.
The universe.
In that deck. Ooh, I like that. I also like how there's like a six-pointed star, but you don't get to see all the points. Didn't we just pull the Six of Pentacles?
I feel like we did. Did we pull it with Michelle? Or did we just pull it?
Yeah, I think it was with Michelle. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. I just watched that one, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, she did pull it because I had pulled the Two of Pentacles or something, and then she pulled the Six. Crazy.
Yeah, that's right. We had the Two and the Six. That's great. We talked about how the Six comes, brings everything back into order, kind of like an even, it's an even number. And the arrangement of that is just insane because there's three sixes there. You have the six pointed star, you have the six little things around, and then in the background you don't really see them, but there's larger discs and there's six of those too. Oh no.
It's a very human card, right?
Yeah,
we decided six is a the human number,
the number of the man.
Yeah
Biblically speaking, six is the number of man. So Gordy has some cards, some very interesting cards I'd never heard of called the I Ching. I mean, until Chance said something, but otherwise I didn't really know.
So my cards have been inherited. And I've got the Golden Dawn deck.
I have questions about the Golden Dawn deck. Ooh,
it's got the same kind of, that's the
old
back
school
of it?
Yeah, that's the back. Oh. This is the, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Nine of cup. Yeah, nine of cups. That's not what I pulled. Anyway, I was just going to show you. But this is I Ching. And it's not really my, I've got a couple of, it's not really my thing yet. But I Ching is the Chinese divination system where you roll three coins, and depending on your three rolls, you get a, I can't remember what it's called, a little tetragram kind of thing that looks like this, depending on your rolls. Like if it's a heads, it's, I can't remember how it works. I honestly don't know. This is kind of Chance's thing.
Yeah.
But this deck.
It's Chance, I would say.
Hey, I'm supposed to be the funny one. No,
we'll leave it up to Chance.
Wah, 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 wah. Let's see.
Gives you time to pick up the coin you dropped.
Gotta get my coins. But so you're supposed to do three. It takes a little while. But if I can do like a, like a little Mancy and pull one and see what kind of wisdom just jumps out of us.
Yeah.
So this is the three Hui hexagram gathering together.
Oh, and there's three of us.
There's three
or
of
two
us,
or yeah. three, shall we say?
In the state denoted by the three hui, the king will repair. Ah, oh, man. Getting old, man.
Yeah.
Eyes go first. The king will repair his ancestral temple. It will be advantageous also to meet with the great man. Maybe number six.
That's and me. Then no, I'm just kidding.
There will be progress and success. Through the advantage must come through firm correctness.
It kind of looks like a bridge to me.
Or like an H.
Or like, or a, an, like M. an H.
Or an M. Or maybe. An M. Yeah.
Yeah, that I've inherited these cards from my father-in-law, who is the reason why I started that group where I met you, mm-hmm. because the group I started was the Conspiratorium, Mystic Inheritance Conspiratorium group that I do on Monday nights, where I read one from one of the books, or we're going through the Mystic Bible right now. And I'm finding all sorts of crazy stuff in these boxes of books that I didn't even know we really had in my garage. And about a year ago, my wife and I started going through them, and we're like, wow, look at this, look at this. There's like, I've got Mystic Bible, which is the one we're going through. Initiation into Hermetics. The CIA's control of Candy Jones, practice and art of the art and practice of Kabbalah magic. It just goes on. So this deck, the Golden Dawn deck, was the one that I mean, I'm a little more familiar with tarot than I am I Ching. So let's see what we got.
The Chariot.
Ooh, Judgment.
Oh, wow.
Oh, look, is that a shin at the bottom?
Yeah.
A Hebrew letter shin.
And that one's really close to the Rider-Waite one also.
Yeah, it's similar to the Rider-Waite for sure.
I like that.
So we'll describe it. I guess there's like there's an angel. Looks like a medic. It's got the...
The cross.
The cross. with a sun or circle behind the angel, or maybe it's the halo. And there's like snakes coming out from.
Oh,
yeah.
Under that with a rainbow. And she's blowing a trumpet. And down in the bottom, there's a water with, we've got four people here. One is in a coffin.
Yeah.
Standing up. Looks like it's hailing the angel. And then you have a guy over here. I mean, this reminds me of baptism.
Mm-hmm. It totally does.
But it's the 20 judgment.
Yeah. The sounding of the trumpet. And then I think the little things coming out around it. I think does the Rider-Waite have that too? The little yodes?
Yeah, I think so. Little squiggly lines. I know I've seen it before. That kind of reminds me of, it is like baptism in a way, because you have the guy who's in the coffin. So he's the one who's raised from the dead. And we talk about death and what that could really mean, not just in a physical sense, but when your old person dies and then you rise again out of the ashes like the phoenix. So you have this new worldview. You see things. You're in direct contact with God or the source or whatever you want to call it. And then there's other people in the water. So you could be kind of like baptizing them or helping them also have that same experience. So where then they can rise up and be their, I guess, like best self or whatever.
Well, that's the alchemical process, right? Is burn out and purify and rebirth.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like so many people like to point that card to like, you know, like we were talking about the rapture or like end times or something like that, but it could just be an everyday experience that happens. This is how we help each other. We die to who we were, are reborn, and then the other people who are willing to get in that water, that freezing cold water, we help for them sure. also.
Yep, absolutely. We heal others by healing ourselves.
Absolutely.
We don't heal other people. We have to figure it out for ourselves to help the other people to figure it out for themselves.
Yeah, that's like, well, when we were talking about that on the episode of Michelle, but that's a main tenet of this show. We always talk about that. Like, you can't help anyone else unless you help yourself. Right.
It's really important.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we have a new guest today. And I met Gordy through, I think it was right after, if I'm remembering correctly, it was right after Owen was on the show with Chance Garten of the Innerverse podcast. So once that happened, I was talking to my friend Spoons, Brandon's friend as well. And I guess she knew Gordy a little bit too, because she'd interacted in his group.
Hi, Spoons.
Yay, hi, Spoons.
What up,
and Spoons? She told me about some of the other people that were kind of in the community, like Davin, whom we just had a week ago, I believe, and Gordy, and some others that she told me about. So I started joining some of their groups and interacting, and I joined one or two of Gordy's Monday night calls, where they read some of the books that he's talking about. When I joined, I think it was like chit chat hour. It was before we started reading. So I got to get to know a few people in there. So that was nice, nice community time. And that's how that's how I got introduced to Gordy. And I would like Gordy to tell us a little bit about how he found Innerverse and Chance and the Weaving Spiders. And maybe you can answer why the name had to change, because we asked Davin last week and he didn't know. So
YouTube strikes.
Yeah.
So we know we were doing something right. If we were getting censored. So
because they're usually not welcome, right?
Right. Well, that's the play. If you don't know what Weaving Spiders Welcome is, it's a show on Saturday nights, runs 4 or 5 hours, sometimes six. You know, who knows? But we start around 7 o'clock Pacific and go to whenever. And it's just a long form conversation that we started just as kind of a hangout. David Barsky and James Maiden. Jim was one of the original crew of RX Only Picture Show. If you guys know SB Alger and Jim Maiden from RX Only. RX Only was where Tracy Twyman was a regular guest host.
I don't know those people, but
oh great, you have a huge
I have a list of people to
dig into. This is great. Check out, I don't even know how to even start about Tracy Twyman, go down that rabbit hole.
Okay.
But at any rate, David Barsky saw me on Rogueways 2 years ago, invited me on one of his just hangouts. And it was just like, you know, buddies that it was like having a conversation with real people again that you didn't have, because it was the beginning of COVID and people were losing their minds, and and I couldn't talk to my homies anymore. You know, like this is the big thing that's happened to for a lot of us, is that, you know, a lot of our relationships have changed over the last few years, a lot. Mm-hmm. And these guys were like the punks I used to hang out with, but weren't sellouts, you know? And so I just kept coming back. And we picked up Alan Marcus, and then we picked up Gabe Slick Dissident, and it's just ballooned from there. We've had just absolutely amazing conversations with everyone from, I'm blanking on all the names. I mean, Ben Balderson is a regular host also. I've gotten to meet the coolest people from just doing this, just showing up.
Yeah.
On Saturday nights, you know, we also do Flow State on Wednesday nights after Chance's show. So here's where I got hooked up with Chance. Chance started coming on as a spider. So what we do, the conversation weaves, we call it a weave, because it'll go anywhere, but it always, no matter what, it always comes back to the same things. Like the synchronicities just blow everyone or all of us away. Because it's like when we're doing these things and we kind of work as like this hive mind thing, like it just comes to us.
Amazing. You know,
even in nature, like we're seeing nature things happening. Like it's happening all over the place. But anyway, getting back to Chance started coming on, and then he started his Wednesday night show.
Vibrant.
Yes, Vibrant. And then we started doing Jim started a Flow State based on this idea he had in college, where he had a class where they would read poetry while you did art and other things. So you kind of trick your mind into getting that flow state, into getting just letting the creative force come out of you, you know, kind of idea. And so we do that on Wednesday nights. And that's just a good hangout. And everybody's pretty much welcome on Flow State. If you want to come on and do art, I mean, they'll make space for you. So that's how I got hooked up with Chance. We started doing the Marvelous Demystifiers. So we do that show once a month, a couple times a month.
Okay, maybe that's the most recent one I saw. Did you do a recent one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We did episode 6 on Mood Night.
Okay. That might be where I saw you, I think, with two other people. Might have been Chance and someone else. And Slick Dissident, was it?
Slick, yeah. You should definitely get Gabe on. He's a just absolutely amazing brain. It's really nice because I can go in and just like sit back and listen to these guys just go off. And then I come in
Yeah, Devin told us about Gabe last week, and he said, you know, he's a really, really cool guy.
It's ridiculous. Like, I love these guys because their brains don't work like mine, you know? We all have these very different experiences,
yes,
which that we're drawing on, and it's really fascinating to see where we've gone, because he and I, between Gabe and Chance and I, we did 2 hours on the first 5 minutes of the symbology in the first Moon Knight scene.
Wow.
So
wow.
It's all this stuff's out there if you have the symbolic literacy to delve into and parse it out. But it takes time, it's work.
Oh yeah.
And
I'm only recently even aware of it. Just started reading Spirit World, the first one, mm-hmm. Dylan Sikosha's book. I mean, I'm doing the audiobook, but I have the Kindle as well. So I'm just listening. And then if I want to take a screenshot of a paragraph and send it to a friend, I do.
Yeah, it's a good way to do. Send it out there and see who's got it, because somebody you may not think has, you know, some nugget, like can dump a giant bag of gold in your lap, and you'll never know it, you know, unless you put yourself out there to have these discussions. And one of the things that Jim and I talked about the first time we did one was, we were just so both sick of the vapid conversation that we were having in daily life. We were just yearning to have these deeper conversations that apparently nobody else wants to have. And so yeah. we just kept coming back, and it's become a thing. We're 93 episodes now, and
oh my gosh,
94. And it's, you know, we've hooked up with Chaney is a regular. If you haven't had Project Chaney on, you know, dig into that. That's, she's amazing.
Okay. I don't know. Project Chaney.
All right. We'll keep going. There's a lot of us.
I'm sure there's a lot of people.
But yeah, it's just a cool community that I'm really grateful that I got hooked up with. And in turn, you guys, and then we've got a lot of Canadian friends now and UK friends that we talk to. And we've got some guys in Bangladesh and
That one guy that joins your Monday nights, right?
Yeah, Emil. He's yeah. a wealth, man. It's amazing.
I could not tell that he was. I could not, like, his accent was to me like, I'm like, where, like, because I couldn't see his face, right? I could only hear him. So I was like, where is he from? Like, I can't tell. I almost thought he had like a slightly European accent, actually. So when I think he sent some pictures of himself, I was like, oh, I'm like, whoa, I didn't even realize he was Bangladeshi.
He's a translator. So it's really interesting. Who used to live in Australia, which I just realized there are certain words he says like in conversation that he says like an Australian. I'm like, that's funny. Why. Okay.
Okay.
But he's a translator. So he talks to everybody around the world, really.
No wonder his accent is, he's very clear.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Like I can barely speak this one. I'm not doing a good job.
That's how I feel sometimes.
You know, I just do it, open up and just keep talking. Just
do it, man.
Just do it. You show up and do it.
Hey.
Do
it, man.
But yeah, I mean, you asked me to come on because I did put out there that I was, you know, ready to kind of tell my story. And, you know, hooking up with the spiders was my story. Because I shared my story with Lindsay on Rogueways 2 years ago about my recovery, because I was just getting out of, I think I'd been a year out of recovery and really lost, I think, probably about 50 pounds at that point. So far now, I've lost 90, you know, I fluctuate now. But it's not something I pay attention to.
Right.
I don't have to.
It's a very natural thing. You're just living now in your natural, normal state.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Finding whatever food balance works for you, you know, because I know everybody's different. Like mm-hmm. I did keto. When I got out of rehab in late 2018, I'd also been diagnosed with a brain tumor in 2014 that I had been dealing with these chronic migraines and back pain and stuff. So I was hooked on opiates, and the depression of that whole situation, you know, I was drinking a lot. So I ended up having to go to rehab. And when I got out, I knew my brain wasn't working. Like there was a point in my life where I was like, damn, I knew I was a smart guy, but it just wasn't clicking anymore. You know, it just wasn't doing, it's just wasn't working. So I knew I had to fix my brain. So from research that my wife was doing, she had found that the ketogenic diet was developed or at least used in the 40s to treat epileptic children. And at that time, I was still having seizures because of my brain issues. And so I went hard into that because I remembered hearing this Canadian doctor talking about how our brains are made of fats and cholesterols. I was like, all right, that's right. You tan a hide with the brain because it's all.
Was it Dr. Walls?
That might have been it.
Yes. She had MS and she was already on a tilt reclined wheelchair already and still having issues and not being able to reverse some just by the tradition. And she was a doctor herself. Right. And she's like, how can I help myself? And she started doing more because like all the pills and stuff that she was prescribing other people and she prescribed to others weren't even helping her. So she started looking at, okay, well, what causes these things in the brain to happen and to deteriorate? And she found, you know, myelin and all this information about how to feed your brain, how to eat well for your brain. And it's really just going back to eating things that aren't processed. I mean, literally is what it is. It's just like, go back to nature, people. Like, stop eating processed food. Oh, crazy. It's raining. It's just like raining and it's sunny and it's raining hard. Holy smokes.
It just started raining here too.
Holy smokes.
Hang on. Is that rain?
Dude, I just heard it and then I see it in through the windows.
That's crazy. So we should say we're not too far away from each other. Yeah, we're about an hour and a half away.
Yeah.
But I'm in Southern Arizona. You're in Phoenix area, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
So that was Dr. Walls and she reversed her MS and she was able to get out of the wheelchair and walk within several months, within like 3 months or something like that. It was like pretty immediate once she started eating well, animal products and vegetables and greens and things like that.
That's exactly right. That's what I did. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't Dr. Walls, but I know her story now too, after that, but, eating. So my big thing was, you know, after rehab, they're like, okay, you need a hobby. You need something productive to do. So you don't have the idle time to think about your addiction or whatever, you know, because you have to retrain your mindset. You have to start from scratch. And I did. I was starting from scratch. I mean, everything had, you know, crumbled. That's where you don't get into rehab for because things are going well, right? So you got to rebuild. So that was my point. When I got back, I'm like, okay. I'm going to cook as many meals myself as I can. I want to know exactly what I'm putting into my food at all times. So I fixed every single meal for, I don't know, 2-3 months. And so it was high fat, no carb at first, and then low carb, good, grass-fed meats, which was a little expensive at the time. You know, who's starting out because I was trying all sorts of different things but once you kind of get how your body works, like it makes it a lot easier. Like you find out what works for you.
Yeah.
And part of that is kind of treating cooking as a meditation. And that's what I did is every time I make a meal, you know, this is my process. I'm going to sit with this. I'm going to put my good intentions, like the, I can't remember the Japanese doctor's name who did the Dr. Emoto. Thank you. Who did the blessing on water idea thing. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this on my coffee. It's a ritual I'm going to do anyway. I might as well make it real, you know? So at that point I did with pretty much every meal for a while. Until I kind of, you know, felt a balance. And after you do that, you know, your body starts to balance it out. Like you need more of this. You don't need any more of that. Like I'm cutting down on dairy now. And I've introduced some carbs and, you know, sweet potatoes and stuff like that back into my diet. But yeah, it was just meat and potatoes and shit, tons of butter, you know, I mean, and I would put, but I would listen to my body. Like as I would meditate on the coffee, I'm like, ginger. I guess I'll put ginger in today. So I try it, you know? Okay. That works pretty well. Ginger and cinnamon. Okay. That works pretty well. Salt, ginger, cinnamon. Okay. That works pretty well. So the magic formula was that I like, that I feel like works for me is ginger, cinnamon, salt, turmeric, and butter in my coffee in the morning. I felt like that really fixed my gut bacteria too. Like that was a big thing, was fixing your gut bacteria so that everything else can work well.
Oh yeah.
You know, and once I got that down, I think it was like 3 months after I started, everything like started clicking. It was like a rebirth, you know, like it was like the baptism. I'd come out, I'm like, oh my God, my body's working again. I didn't know what this was like. You know, I start thinking clearly and my body, I'm like, oh, I can actually exercise now because I don't feel like shit every second of the day. And I don't want to like crawl back into bed every morning. And it didn't take long. That was the thing, is that I was surprised at how quickly it happened. But I'm more surprised that, maybe not more surprised. I mean, I was ready for the change. So it was easy. It was like, absolutely. You know, the big thing that in recovery, they're like, oh, you know, I'm backsliding. Everybody, you know, it's part of the process or whatever. And this is the bullshit of the 12-step programs that they sell you.
It is.
You don't have to go back if you don't want to.
Exactly.
It's your choice.
I just heard thunder.
Right on. Cool. See, there you go. See, nature again is pointing out to us, you know, through these synchronicities.
Yeah.
That, you know, the stuff that we should be paying attention to.
Yeah, totally. It's funny you mentioned the whole like alcohol anonymous type stuff where these people tell you, well, just be careful because you just might backslide. And it's like, you won't if you don't want it anymore. Brandon and I say this a lot on the show where we say, do it till you're done. Like you're gonna have this, whatever it is, that this vice or whatever it is that you have, and it's gonna be there until you're done with it. When you're done with it, then it'll be done with you. So like, don't be like, oh, I gotta quit because then that'll make me more holy, or I'll be like this, or I'll be like that. No, just do it till you're done. And when you're sick of it, you'll be done with it. And you'll never want to go back to it.
And when you're ready for that transformation, you'll do it.
Yeah.
Or life will make it so that you won't have another choice.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Very true.
It'll bring the loop back around to you until you choose the change.
And it will keep choosing you until you choose it. Because if you put off that calling, whatever that calling is for you, if you keep putting it off, it's just going to keep coming back. So one of the reasons that I think it worked so easily for me was I had a lot of help in nature. Synchronicities, whatever you want to call it, happened. At that same time, I started meditating under this tree at work, before work. And in this tree was a family of owls. And if you go on my Instagram, Gordy_2_shoes, you'll see thousands and thousands of owl pics and baby owl pics and Gila monsters and frogs and all flowers and all sorts of desert flora and fauna. But I have all that because as I was meditating under this acacia tree, the owls were staring at me. Like they're observing me, like observing them as I'm trying to like center myself. So talk about a challenge. Like you have a giant predatory bird. These are big predators for a reason. And I guess Gwen's probably maybe like 3 feet. She's about that big, I guess.
What did you name her?
Gwen. She's the matriarch. Gwen and Peter are the couple.
Nice.
And they live in the acacia tree. And since I've been meditating under them. They've had three sets of clutches of babies that I've been able to observe, that they allow me to be around the babies. That's the most amazing thing. But I mean, it took a lot of work. It took years of just meditating under that tree and going, hey, I'm cool, you're cool. And being one with them, you know, being
like, I'm open. Not here to harm you.
Right, exactly. And when you get that center where you just sit back outside of yourself and you just are your natural self and you're one with the nature, like nature sees it and it'll interact. I tell people this all the time. Nature wants to conspire with us. You know, we in these communities, we always talk about conspiracies because that's what a lot of us got here for. But we've gone past that. Now we're coming back around to the other side of spirituality and where there's actual meaning, not just like figuring out the code of the bullshit. We're actually figuring out the code in our own bullshit.
Absolutely.
Well said.
So the owls, getting to know them, and the last three were Flora, Fauna, and Meriwether. And little Meriwether, I had suspected that he'd had a tussle with the bobcats, right? Because I'd found bobcat remains, young bobcat remains in a wash near there, which an adult owl will take out a bobcat in a heartbeat. But mostly a kit, like a good, strong, full adult bobcat doesn't really have to worry about it. But he has a little messed up eye. And I'm like, oh no, what happened? I mean, he's doing good now. He's fine, but he had a tussle. And I found just day before yesterday, if you go on my Instagram, there's a bobcat in that tree.
I remember you posting that.
Yeah, that's the same tree. But it was a kit, which was really interesting because the adults weren't there because they would have torn him up. But they let him be for some reason. It was interesting. I wonder if there's like a symbiotic
relationship there.
Yeah. Another thing that I've been able to observe that I don't think many people have is hummingbirds and owls. There's a symbiotic relationship.
Oh, really?
Where owls will kind of be the doormen, the bouncers of the tree for the hummingbirds. So there's lots of hummingbirds around this tree. It's the coolest thing.
So cute.
So you have the giants and the little ones. But, you know, being out in nature, it's all there. You just have to be in it to observe these things. Yeah. And not getting out. I don't understand now why I didn't do it for the first 47 years of my life. But, you know, having a true appreciation and gratitude for nature. You know, what nature can do for our bodies. Let your food be your medicine is a real thing.
Yeah, totally is.
So I almost immediately after, I would say a month, I stopped having seizures after I went on the high fat, low carb diet. Within 3 months, I lost like 50 pounds.
Wow.
Within 6 months, I lost 75. And walking out in nature, like each time I went out to go see the owls, I was like, oh, there's another trail out. Because they would kind of, you know, lie out to another wash. And I'd be like, oh, where's the owl gone? Go follow him and just get lost in the desert. And I found all sorts of magical things out there
that you'll tell us about in a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. So as I was coming back and starting to share like pictures and things with people of the owls and my journey, there was somebody that I don't know who this person was, popped into one of our chat rooms. It was like, hey, were you in a traumatic, life-changing experience recently or something? And I'm like, maybe, but this is a stranger. So I had not talked about, you know, rehab or going to any of that stuff. And it was just somebody that said, well, owls kind of symbolize, you know, death and rebirth, and they're kind of a sign of a shamanic initiation. And I'm like, what? Whatever, weirdo. And I didn't give it enough attention at the time, other than to go, wait, who was that? Like, I thought, that's weird. And I thought, oh, who is that? It's got to be Lindsay Sharman. I'm thinking, 'cause she's the only one that's like, that we talk regularly, that's kind of on that level, but it wasn't her. And I didn't know, I never could find out who that person was. So I go back and I'm meditating at the owl tree going, what is happening? And I just kind of got this understanding of not the word magic, but magic. It's all around you. Mm-hmm. And if you just open yourself to even A, acknowledge it, and B, interact with it, like that kind of blows up a whole other section of understanding. You know, once we start digging into tarot cards and stuff, it's like, oh man, my woo is on. Like the owls told me so. All my woo switch went, whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. I was on. So, I mean, I don't know how you would, I mean, I'm sure throughout my life I've ignored different signs of those kinds of things.
You just weren't ready.
I wasn't ready, exactly.
Yeah.
But now I was ready. So it was ready to interact with me.
Yeah.
So they were my teachers, really. I mean, honestly. Because I was able to, and my doctors flip out now. They always go every time. Well, I don't go to the doctor very often because I don't have to.
Yeah.
But when I have to, they're like, wow, what did you do? It's like a miracle. Like, it's not a miracle, man. It's work. And
it's real.
It's real. Right. And your medicines are making everybody worse.
Mm-hmm.
When I got out of rehab, I checked because I had been on just a cocktail of all sorts of different things for this and that and other. So on the Walgreens phone system, I was about to refill something and I realized that I could check every single prescription that had been sent to my prescription center, you know, by all of the different doctors, because I had like four different specialists at the time. And I went through every single prescription that had been called in for me, and there were 22 open.
Wow.
Ones I had not even taken. I mean, if that's not a huge, and it was terrifying to me when I realized that, I was like, oh my, I'm barely alive. Like at that point, I was like barely hanging on. I'm like, wow, this is not good. And they're poisoning everybody. That's the thing, is I wasn't alone. Like everybody's on meds.
Yeah. When people ask, like, I don't know where this would happen because I can't even think the last time, but I feel like people are, oh, like, what are you taking, or are you on any medications? And I'm like, no, I'm not on anything. And they're like, what?
Right.
They don't even get it.
Yeah, it's so far. I mean, this is why we're in the Rona situation we are right now, because we trusted those rat bastards for too long instead of trusting ourselves.
Exactly.
So Yeah, it's kind of nice to go to the doctors now and kind of rub it in their face, like, see, you didn't know anything. Yeah. That's why you're fired.
You're fired. Yeah.
I
see it as a lot of people. And the way that I look at it now is most of these people, they just want a quick fix. Yeah. So they can go back to their life of escapism, basically, just, you know, eating all this garbage and like, oh, I'll just take a quick pill. And these guys are ready, more than willing to give you a quick pill with all these side effects that they list. That's just crazy.
Well, and they've got those doctors by the short and curlies because they have to make the money back. They've got to take they've got to play ball.
Yeah.
Because their student loans are astronomical and they're never going to pay them back. And these poor guys if they had, you know, pure intentions to begin with, it's like politics. If they had pure intentions to begin with, they'll be gone by the second or third year.
Yeah.
You know, you either play ball or you're out.
Yeah.
Which is nothing new. You know, Robert, Dr. Randolph Stone was the author of Mystic Bible. And he was a Western doctor, born in Austria, came to the United States, got really disillusioned with Western medicine. And this was in the 20s. He left medicine altogether and moved to India to study the mystery schools and to study energy healing. So wow. He came up with this thing called polarity theory, which is kind of a precursor to Reiki. It's kind of a pre-Reiki, at least not what the Western world would have known now, what it is now, you know. But this was in the 20s.
Yeah.
This is nothing new. We're retelling the same stories. We're living the same stories over and over again. But the cool thing is a lot of us like us are refining these stories and the lessons that I 100% believe that these are just lessons that we forgot. That when we hear them and they have a ring of truth to them, that's because we already knew it. Mm-hmm. It's already in there somewhere in our ancestry or in our DNA or whatever. We knew this stuff. Yeah. We've been convinced to forget them. That natural law is how we were supposed to. We're supposed to live in conjunction with nature because you're a natural being. Mm-hmm. We're not supposed to fight it. We're supposed to be part of it and live with it.
Totally.
Yeah, 100%. And it really is amazing because like when you were talking about connecting with all the spiders and everybody and all these different groups of people, it's crazy because a lot of people say like that technology is evil and it's the devil and all this stuff, but it's just another tool and it's allowing all these people to reconnect. And that's another reason why I really believe that the quote unquote evil people like the Illuminati or whatever, them, I don't think they're as evil or nefarious, or maybe they just have to leave a loophole open for discourse like this to happen. But people are connecting. And when you, like you said, you look back and it's always been happening. The 1800s, there's people writing brilliant stuff that we were never taught in school. You know, early 1900s, even mid 1900s, you have people like Edgar Cayce, you know, all these people that were talking about it. It's just, you have to go look for it, you know, seek and ye shall find. Just like the medical thing. If you want the easy answer, fine, you go to school, right? You want the easy cure, you go to a doctor. But if you take the time to look and research for yourself, all these answers are here. And there's all these people now. You know, I really think I still say 2020 was a blessing because it knocked a lot of people out of our complacency. Even though we knew a lot about this stuff, we were still able to hang out with our friends, like you said, you know. But once 2020 happened, it was like there's a line in the sand now and you're either on one side or the other. I was really blessed to have a lot of friends that saw through it. They still went along with a lot of it, but at least I wasn't really ostracized so much. But yeah, I made so many more new friends online and then I made them real friends because we went and met in real life. And that's something I suggest to everybody who's listening to this, make internet friends real.
100%.
Because that's really what I guess you could say whatever they, them, that that's what they don't want. They'd rather, you know, the division is really what it's all about. And then when you're online, it's so much easier to argue with somebody about something, but when you're in person, you're not going to argue about these silly little things as easily. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. People like to hide behind their little computers behind a black scrying mirror and typing their little replies to people and in anger.
You know? Yeah, well, I think we've all kind of had that.
We've had that experience, yeah.
Right? I mean, if we haven't done it ourselves,
yeah.
I mean, I certainly did in the early days of social media, for sure.
Yeah.
Like the conspiracy stuff, you know, because a lot of us thought through it, you know, at the beginning, a lot of us like didn't have a wake up. I mean, I did in that. I guess.
I like that. Never heard that before. A lot of us didn't have a wake up.
Yeah. I mean, or it's a slow process of
right. It started happening happening probably back in college or like around college timeframe when I started seeing a lot of things, but it was slowly. Yeah. So, but yeah, yep. Keep going.
Yeah. Mine was when I started working for a military contracting company and I saw some things. And it was extremely disturbing. Mm. And like on a level that most people, like, you know, you thought 9/11 was bad. Like you knew it from afar, it was bad. But these, you're like seeing it, things up close, you know, it has a very different ring unless you're in it, you know? So, I mean, PTSD is a real thing for a reason. And again, doctors are not helping these people. They don't understand it. They really don't have a good understanding of it and coming through that too. These poor guys that are getting out of the military right now, because I mean, they're desperate too, to escape, you know?
Yeah. Brandon was a Marine.
Ah, you're a Marine. You're a jarhead, huh?
Yeah, I was in 94 to 98. So it wasn't as crazy as now, but I still saw some things. Like I always tell the story. I did stand-up comedy for about 7 years, and I would tell the story because everybody would thank me for my service. And I'm like, you know what I did one night, guys? And they go on to thank me for my service. Like I was on an aircraft carrier for 6 months. I'm like, one night, in the middle of the night, they just took me there. They woke a bunch of people up and they took us to where they keep the trash. Now, when you're far enough out at sea, they let you dump certain trash, like certain things or whatever, because you have to separate it, but you can never dump plastic. And we were at sea for almost 2 months one time. We had no room. So we just went to the side of the ship where the garbage was and dumped like tons of plastic into the ocean. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, there you go.
Hey. Thank you for your service.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Anytime.
You made a job for some hippie that's got his life mission to clean up the plastic oceans. Island out there.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So good for you, man. You gave a guy purpose.
A job, dude. You gave him a job.
But that's the thing too, is, you know, you were talking about the evil they, and I don't think they know they're evil.
No, yeah. They don't.
They don't. Yeah. They don't see it as an evil. And honestly, if we didn't have struggle in life, we wouldn't. We wouldn't be growing. And without they interfering with that, we wouldn't have that. So even them, we have to see. Like my friend Sean, SB Alger, God bless that dude. He says he has a note that he wrote on his mirror that I want to see Christ in Crowley, like trying to take the two polar opposites, you know, like of what we think of the polar opposites, you know.
That's a major thing. Like,
Brandon, you want to say something?
Yeah,
Brandon and I have been talking about. So when you said Crowley, it's like it's so synced. Go, Brandon.
So what, basically to start, when I got into this, I watched like that Zeitgeist movie in like 2006 or 2007. And that's when I was onto the whole 7-Eleven as a part-time job, you know, like I knew that those two towers, there was more to that, right? So I also, by that movie, was really disillusioned by all my religious thoughts because I learned about astrotheology, but it doesn't give you the next step. So I became, I guess, like some kind of agnostic person. And then when I got back into it, it was through Eastern practices like Buddhism and meditation and stuff like this. So like around 2013, 2014, I started to get into that. And then I got into Hermeticism. So I had no real connection with the Christian thing. So I got into Michael Tesserion. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He's a pretty, and he would talk a lot about Crowley. And I never really saw him as anyone that was demonized. So then we started hanging out with these bears. That's how I met Sharon. And a lot of them are Christian or Christian adjacent, not all of them. And Owen Benjamin even said the other day, he's like, this is not a Christian app. He's like, we can have Muslims, you know, there's like heathens, whatever. He's like, we're all cool here. But everybody picks on Aleister Crowley. So for me, Sharon and I have been talking a lot lately, and we found this one video where Michael Tesserion was like flipping out on this guy. And this was like in the early 2000s about, because the guy was like, oh, Crowley was like a devil worshiper. And he's like, you Christians are newcomers to this battle against evil. He's like, you know, we've had this camp for thousands of years. He like flipped out on the guy. And so I've been looking a lot into it lately. It's just these little things that keep coming in up into it. And we have this, not to spoil it too much for an upcoming episode, but I guess we could talk about it. We have this idea that we're putting together that, you know, he wasn't a perfect guy. You know, no man is perfect. Well, we're all perfect, right? But he wasn't this like do-gooder or whatever. But I feel like a lot of the stuff that he said and a lot of stuff that he did, it's possible because he believed in this different ages of man. And one of the ages was like an age of chaos that would usher in this golden age. And I think that it's possible that he was giving some people the keys and ideas to bring this age of chaos a little faster and to speed it up. But it's because he wanted the golden age, I think, after, or he was more interested in that. And then again, you know, he was very eccentric, and he was like a trust fund kid. So a kid, and he had some crazy sexual proclivities allegedly or whatever. But again, nobody's perfect, but I don't think he was coming at it from a place of evil. He even talked about black magicians and dark magic and how he never practices it and how whoever practices that is stupid and all this stuff. So I really feel like he was like a gray Jedi, I guess you could say, just somebody who wasn't dark or, you know, black or white. He was in the middle, and he kind of saw what needed to be done. And if you think about it, at the end of the day, if we are all immortal, then he's not really, he could justify it. And again, and I'm not saying I agree with this, and this is something I want to do in my life, but an argument could be made that he's not really killing anybody, not personally, or even if he's talking like helps NASA or all these little things, right? All this stuff is based on people's belief. And if they're willing to believe it and usher in this chaos, it's really on them at the end of the day. Mm. So we've been trying to come at this from a different point of view and looking into all this stuff. So it's crazy that you brought that up about him, because I think depending on how you shift your lens, you could view him in all different all different ways. And this would be one of the ways where he's actually not a bad guy. But then again, maybe he's not a good guy. You know, he's just in the middle.
Or maybe we just needed that guy to start something else that other people have taken out of context and, you know, perverted it even more. Who knows what the original source actually was?
Yeah.
I mean, we weren't there. I personally wasn't there.
Exactly. We don't know him.
Right. I don't know him
personally.
And one other thing, too, about him, which a lot of people don't know, is that he was anti-Zionist. So a really easy argument could be made that, yeah, he hung out with all these people like Wernher von Braun, allegedly, and Walt Disney and all these people who like are like these wizards or whatever. But if he hung out with them and then all of a sudden started talking about anti-Zionism, but then people like Walt Disney and Wernher von Braun and like L. Ron Hubbard, all these people, they're not really demonized, but Aleister Crowley is. If they were all just as evil, why is he the one demonized? And then you have to think about, who's demonizing him? Is it the press? Is it the media? Mm-hmm. Is it the heads of these Christian churches? Not the Christians themselves, who could be good people, but like the Pope, you know what I'm saying? Is he the one who's demonizing him? Well, then maybe you should take a look at it and see why he's demonizing him and not jump on that bandwagon, you know? That's all we're saying.
For real. Yeah, we need those weirdos.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I was just talking to someone about that because this person was kind of bothered by that, the fact that I was kind of looking into that topic, and was saying that this person was so evil and gross and disgusting and all this stuff. And I choose to look at it in the way of, I don't know if you've looked into the Law of One and A Course in Miracles. Yep. So I explained, I said, okay, well, I like to see it in this way that, look, we are all connected. We're all from the divine. I cannot, I'm not going to judge somebody for choosing a path that they're going on. And let's say they're polarizing negative, right? But that's their path. Like they're doing that for a reason. Perhaps they came into this realm in this lifetime to do this particular job, this thing. And maybe it wakes people up, right? And that was their job this lifetime. I don't know what they're going to do next lifetime or whatever. I'm not here to judge them. And like the Course in Miracles says, they're acting out of insanity. So I can turn around and have compassion on them. So yeah. I just choose to look at it in that way than to like demonize people and like, oh, they're evil. Just like you guys were saying, the alleged controllers of this world. I don't have any negativity, hatred or anything toward them. They're just doing what they think is best for themselves, right? For themselves. I mean, don't we all try to do that at some point in our lives, right? Until we reach the point where we're like, well, actually now I'm healed. I'm healing myself. I'm doing a lot better. Now I can help other people. But some people don't see that. They don't get there. So they're just doing the best they can because that's what they're doing for themselves. And who knows, what if it brings an awakening because they're acting out of insanity and other people can finally be like, wait, this is just getting ridiculous. Like you're telling me that these animals, now it's this animal that's causing this and now it's another animal that's causing this, you know, contagion of some sort. It's like, it's just getting out of hand. Like, are you serious? This is crazy. You know, could it be that it wakes people up and that was for a purpose and for a plan? I don't know.
Yeah.
We're just asking questions.
Something James True put me onto a couple of years ago when I used to follow him a little more. He had this view where, what if it was like a band of merry tricksters, you know, this like Illuminati, whatever. And they're just basically pulling pranks on everybody until they're trolling people until they wake up. And maybe some of them aren't even aware of it, but I think there definitely is that element. And I've also seen a lot of evidence where there's not just like one controlling group or whatever, not that they're even controlling anything. They're really just providing vices and escapism and all the stuff for people so they could corral them, I guess, or whatever. But there could be different entities involved. And I think that there is definitely this element. And it's like Bill Cooper said, one of our guests that we had on, Joe, about a month ago or so. He sent me this lecture that, or it was like a radio show that Bill Cooper did. And he was saying how.
Who died in Phoenix? Talking to your,
what's that?
Who died in Phoenix?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's crazy.
Hit by a car.
Oh, I thought he was killed by like IRS agents or something that came to his house.
Oh, that may be another one. There's been a lot of them.
Yeah, a lot of crazy. Yeah,
there's a lot of crazy ones. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
Oh, no, no worries. So Bill Cooper was saying how, because he wrote Behold the Pale Horse and all this stuff, and he was onto this conspiracy early, and he basically boiled it down to saying there really is no conspiracy. So when you're talking to somebody and you're trying to tell them about these conspiracies and they're like, there's no conspiracies, they're actually right, because they don't realize they're right, but these people are doing it out in the open. I mean, you know, like, they leave clues. They leave major clues, like right from the beginning of this whole 2020
episode,
I guess you could say. Right away, the governor of Connecticut got on and said, you have to wear a mask unless you have an exemption. Like, he left it in there for you. You know, there's always a way out, but most people, they just don't hear that. And then they want to follow the crowd. And I think this episode really woke a lot of people up. Like, my mother came to me like the day they shut everything down. I went to my parents' house, which I live here now, but I went there and my mom was like, you were right about everything that you tried. Cause I used to try to tell them about the conspiracy and stuff. She's like, you were exactly right about all this stuff, you know?
That's
and
hilarious.
It takes this level to wake people up, to get them out and not want to play these games anymore. And then to, I guess, better their life. So I really have no animosity toward these people. They're just playing a part. You know, all the world is a stage. That's when people start asking me that are like normies or whatever. Like, what do you think about this conspiracy? I'm like, all the world is a stage. Mm-hmm. And for people who are listening that aren't familiar with us and you want to talk to somebody or whatever, I try not to talk about any of this stuff anymore, but I always bring up JFK because JFK doesn't really hurt that many people's feelings anymore. Maybe some boomers or whatever. And I'm always like, have you ever heard of Lem? And they're like, who's Lem? And then you show them all these videos. Lem was this openly gay guy that was friends with JFK since like they were kids. And there's all these pictures of them shirtless and dancing. And he lived in the White House. I'm like, there's a conspiracy for you. Look into that. I said that at this guy to this guy at a wedding. He was coming up and talking to me. We were having a great conversation. And he was asking me, he's like, oh, my son's into conspiracies. And I told him that. And he started Googling. And he came back like an hour later, like, holy shit. He's like, how did I never hear about this? I'm like, yeah, there's a good one for you. It's a good starter.
See, what a blessing, though, that your family was able to come to you and say, it's, you know, you're right. Like, most people are getting like, yeah, like after people start dying,
yeah.
Now they're like, oh, well, you know, you didn't know.
Yeah.
Like, you no, I fucking, lucky. I told you. I told you exactly what was going to happen. Exactly what was going to happen, happened.
Yeah.
And you're still not getting it. And every single one of us that told you so deserve an apology, but we're not going to get it. And that's okay. Because here's the thing, is we've got to get to that point of gratitude for the they.
Exactly.
Because we're, and maybe that is their point. Maybe they're not. Maybe they were put on this earth, in this plane, to interact with us now, to create the fuckery, so that the rest of us will go, bing!
Yep.
Or to just call the herd. The ones that'll get bing, you got to start over.
Yeah. And if you take that too, it's a lot because somebody could say, oh, well, then that's terrible because they're killing people. Well, if you really believe we're immortal and you believe in like some form of reincarnation, they're taking people that just can't handle it. Because I know a lot of people that checked out. I mean, I know a few people that killed themselves and all this stuff, you know, so they're taking that and they're recycling. And now they could be born into a family because the people now are having kids. Most of them are doing it because most people aren't having kids, I guess you could say. And the ones that are having kids are the ones that kind of realize it or get it. I would say maybe a larger percentage. So now they have a chance to be born into a house where maybe there's not as much trauma. Maybe there's other stuff and they can learn different things and they can have a maybe easier go at it, you know, and take some of these lessons that they learned, even though they might not remember it, it's still like imprinted in their soul or whatever you would say, their spirit. So that's how I look at it too. You know, we've been into Archaics' work a lot, Jason from Archaics, and he talks about how every time there's a lot of death or a lot of catastrophe and stuff, there always seems to be a baby boom afterwards. So he's like, it's kind of like this, it's like a program. He looks at it more as a simulation. I don't totally agree with him on that. I think it's more of a spiritual realm. We can get into that if you'd like, but still same concept though, just different words for it. It's like people in a dark room feeling an elephant, right? Just explaining, they're putting their best words to it. But I think that's what's happening. They get recycled back into a better situation, really. And that doesn't mean you can go around killing people, everybody. It's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that's a good way to view it, because then you take yourself out of that victim consciousness. Then there's not really anything to be sad about, you know?
Yeah, I think it's the difference between matter and infinity, like the finite and the infinite. Once you understand the concept of infinity and realize that infinity is a real thing, you can't not be part of the infinite. You and I and everybody else out there is part of the all, the infinite. And this is that law of one thing. We'll go back to there. It's the only thing that ends up making sense again. Where, and this is this is either, you know, an entropy point or, you know, there is a zero point of some sort where the universe comes back to a source, God, whatever you want to call it. It's a thing, you know, and if you don't want to acknowledge that, I guess if you're in that, at that point in your journey, that's your path, I guess. I don't, I'm not here to convert anybody.
I know.
Exactly.
Same here.
But
we're just oversharing.
Exactly. Right. We're just going to overshare until you get it.
I'm a comedian. This is an entertainment show, everybody. Come on.
For real. This is the thing, is we have to keep entertaining the questions or else we're not going to find the right answers. We've been asking the wrong questions. In fact, we haven't been asking questions.
Bingo. Exactly.
I work in the school system and it's tough to see that, you know, kids come out of high school, you know, not with a whole lot of, you know, knowledge to arm themselves, like really arm themselves against the real world about what's really happening. You know, I think it wouldn't take long, like, hell, we could probably get it done in the first freshman year. And then somebody, you know, people can go off and be productive. Like what the school systems do for children or not, I don't know. It's not helping people, but that's another system, another system that we've created that we feel like people think they can't get out of it. Yeah, you can. People educated their own kids for thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah.
Think you'll be all right. It's like people grew their own food for thousands and thousands of years. You'll be all right.
Yeah, that's something that John Taylor Gatto used to talk about, which I love. If anyone's not familiar with him, he's the guy who was a New York City school teacher for years, like in the 70s and 80s. And he would always have these brilliant students in any class he would take, like either in Harlem or Brooklyn or even like the Upper West Side where like all the rich people were. He always had this. And basically what he taught them was he just taught them what they would teach you in these elite boarding schools. And it's how to get things done, how to get what you want, how to talk to people. It's not about memorizing facts or anything like that. It's just like about how to approach the world. And I mean, I think that's really what homeschooling is about. People have this misconception. They don't want to homeschool because they're like, well, I hated school. I don't want to have to teach all this crap. Well, you don't have to teach all that crap to your kids. You know, you could just teach them how to run a business. You know, I mean, I have a friend who has a 7-year-old son that, I mean, he could start his own YouTube channel and probably be a millionaire if he wanted to. The kid is so smart. He loves to play chess. He loves all the stuff. And it's like, I keep telling him, like, you don't, and the tough thing is his mom's a teacher and like, you know, like a first, second grade teacher. So she's always like, ugh. But I'm like, you know, and my friend is the one who owns the DJ company that I work for. So he knows all this stuff because he dropped out of college and he made his own way and he used to work 3 days a week and, you know, have a Mercedes. Now he's working like a madman because he owns his business. But I keep telling him, I'm like, just take him with you to work. He'll learn more hanging out with you than he will, you know, at the school. And yeah, it's crazy. And another thing you said about the law of one that I love is in the law of one, they talk about the seven different densities of consciousness. But they said when you get to the top, you just start another cycle. So I feel like infinity, it just keeps going on forever and ever. And something we just heard again, Michael Tesserion say, I just got back into him again recently. So he talked about how a lot of people need to be secure. A lot of people who are into religion, of course, like Christianity, they need a starting point and an ending point. So they have like Genesis and Revelation, basically, and they need a God to worship. And so then they feel in control because without that, they have no idea what's going on. Like infinity, I think, just scares people and they lose that sense of control. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that a lot where you just have to let go because you're not in control, but you are in control. It's a paradox. But if you can learn to let go, then I think you could control it a lot better.
It's beautiful. That liminal really space. Okay. You guys ever seen a Freemason tracing board?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you know what it looks like? It has like there's always a checkerboard floor. There's a pillar on both sides, right? The two pillars and everything is drawing your eye up to one point between the pillars, right? Mm-hmm. The pillars are, personally, like we, Gabe and I have been digging these things for a while, but the space between the pillars is the liminal space. It's like the Yakim and Boaz of it. They're the good and evil, right? It's the yin and yang, but we're meant to see in here, not here, right? Where the answers are is between the answers. Like they say it's that, they say it's that, it's probably right here.
Somewhere in between.
It's somewhere.
The middle way.
Not even, yeah, the middle path. Exactly.
The gray, Brandoff the gray.
Yeah, Brandoff the gray. Yeah, that's my nickname. Yeah. And the gray brand.
I see you're starting to get it, man.
Yeah.
That's nice. It looks cool on you.
Thanks.
See, it's a streak. Yeah.
So it's all coming in all like splotchy and stuff, man.
I get some hairs too. I'm not bad for 46 though. I can't really complain. So
really, you're 40, dude. You look great, man.
Most of my friends are like either have no hair or they're gray or yeah. So I don't know. And it's funny because they're always like, they say I eat weird, but I'm like, yeah, but look at me, like you know what I mean?
For real? Yeah, I do it all the time. Like people are like, wait, no, you're not that old.
Yeah, I'm guessing you're like 50 or something or around there.
Yeah, 51. Yeah,
I wouldn't have guessed that either.
But I mean, if I shave my beard, I look like a little kid.
Yeah, that's how. Like when I was in the Marines, they were like, "Are you 12?" And they're like, "Are you sure?" I look because I'm tall. I'm like 6'5", so they thought I was like a giant 12-year-old. They're like,
giant 12-year-old.
That's why when people talk about like, oh, you look so young, and like you're lucky. I'm like, yeah, I'm lucky now. But when I was like 21, like I had got carded till I was like 36 or whatever. It was crazy. Not that I'm complaining, but yeah, it was funny.
Were you 6'8" when you were like 12?
No, I was.
6'5"?
No, well, the thing is, I was 6'4" when I joined the Marines, and I was 6'4" up until the last time I really measured myself was 2018, but then recently I've done a bunch of measurements and now I'm 6'5". So something with the stretching and healing or whatever, I got an extra inch. I think I gained it by not wearing a mask. That's what I tell people. They get so
just shame them.
Yeah. Oh, I love telling people that. I'm like, in 2021, because I would only do weddings if I didn't have to wear one. So I would be in these venues and some of the staff would be wearing them, like, oh, this is such bullshit. And I remember I'd say, I'm like, I never wore a mask. And they looked at me like these kids are like, you never wore a mask? That was like their freaking hero. I was like, yeah, fuck that. You don't gotta wear a mask. Get out of here.
Yeah. Let's see. Where were we? Oh, you know what? Let me show you guys some. I was going to show you this though.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was, I was going to go on the Freemason tracing board thing, but
yes, we were talking about tracing boards. One thing I want to say quickly too, there's a quote from the Tao that reminds me of that. And it says, whether you move up the ladder or down it, your position is shaky. Stand with 2 feet on the ground, something like that. And that blew my mind because that's what I thought about. I thought about the ladder and they're always talking about ascending and all this different stuff. And I was just like, wow, it's crazy. Whether you move up the ladder or down, your position is shaky.
So just ground yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another thing, like quite literally that I started doing that made a huge difference was literal grounding. First thing in the morning, your skin in the soil, you know, either feet or your hands, something, you know, get it, because there are enzymes in our soil that help us process, you know, it fights depression, all sorts of things that can like even help heal your gut bacteria and those kind of things that we keep associating dirt with dirty. Isn't that's where you came from? You are dirt.
Yeah.
We are made of dirt.
There was a book recently by, I forgot his name. Hold on. I think I have it.
One thing I'll say really quick.
It's called Eat Dirt.
Eat Dirt. Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. By, what's his name?
We were talking about this on an episode recently where it's like all this stuff grows around you, like nature tries to help, like dandelions are just pushing up through the soil and people are just like hitting them with this chemicals, but it's like all this stuff that you need, like mushrooms and all this stuff, is just all around us. There really is no lack of anything.
So this book is called Eat Dirt. It's by Dr. Josh Axe. And it's funny because I was already starting to, in like 2011, 2012, I was starting to migrate into like the low carb, what some people would call paleo or keto. Mm-hmm. Like I never wanted to, like, I couldn't box myself into that because I wasn't exactly that, but I would just say I'm paleo like
paleo adjacent
paleo adjacent or like low carb. But once I started doing that, then this book came out, and as soon as I read it, I was like, I get it. Like, I was like, boom, like it makes total sense. Like nothing. And I was reading through it and it's just like, nothing is like people like thinking that their animals are dirty or that like their animals licking them, or, you know, some people don't, right? But other people might, right? And just like being out in the dirt and like letting something fall on the ground and still eating it. And like, you know what I'm saying? That kind of thing. And he was like, that stuff is actually better for you than like sanitizing stuff. Because, and when I mean, literally when I read this, and this, I just looked, I think it was published in 2016. But it was like, it was all starting to make sense to me. And then I was just like, dude, I get it. Like nature, like go back to nature. That's where it's at. It's just, it makes total sense. But anyway, you were saying something about we're dirt and I derailed.
Yeah, no, that's not derailing at all. That's
oversharing.
we are oversharing. But that is the thing that we're seeing. The consequences of protecting our children from dirt. Like, I mean, we didn't have sanitized. I grew up in the 70s. You know, we didn't have sanitized anything. We had lawn darts and BMX bikes and we had dirt clod fights.
Yeah, if we didn't come home literally dirty, they'd be like, what are you doing? Yeah. They'd be like suspicious.
Suspicious, if we didn't come home exactly. Yeah, what trouble did you get in?
Because, yeah,
you know, well, I burned down a building, but I came home all clean.
One of my first memories, I remember I had like a nail or something, and I had a dandelion plant, and I was like probably like 5 or 6, and I was just sitting in the front yard, and I was like digging into it, and I was like eating it and stuff. My mom's like, oh, yeah, that's cool. I'm like, yeah, sure. Like,
right?
Well, look at me now.
Exactly. But I mean, we're seeing in these younger generations how sick these kids are.
Yeah.
Like they're very constantly ill.
Yeah.
With
the hand sanitizers and all this stuff.
And first thing they do is, well, they can't pay attention, so get them on a ADHD med or whatever. It's just ridiculous. And then, which sets them up for failure later on because now they can't get off of it.
Yeah.
But dirt is a getting actually into a state of natural law where you can interact, where you're not afraid of it, where you're actually seeking it out because the magic is coming back to you. So my owls disappeared in 2019 for a while, like 6 months or something. And I was kind of in this like depression. I was like, man, this sucks. But then, I got to a point where it's part of the process. I appreciated the time I had to spend with them and all that stuff. Got to that point. And then chance, and actually Lindsay had Mitch the orgone donor on her show. And I listened to him talk about his earth pipes.
Yeah.
So I'm like, dude, okay, well, let's try it. Now, I didn't do this to bust the tower that was on the other side of the tree. I did it to get my owls back. Mm-hmm. But busted the tower. And I mean, not busted.
I wanted to ask you what you mean by that, but go ahead, keep going.
It didn't bust it. It changes. I believe it changes the resonance between it and you.
Okay.
So it'll. I think it changes the resonance in the ground and up into the sky. That it kind of changes the wave a little bit.
Okay. It alters it, and then so that it doesn't affect you like it would have.
Right. Well, here's the secret sauce is I put those in between the owl tree and the tower on a Friday. On a Monday, my owls were back.
Wow.
So, that's insane.
In fact, people around the office were like, dude, what did you do? Because they all noticed, they're like, because the elves don't like anybody but me, which is kind of nice, but they will attack people. And so people tend to stay away, or they give them a wide berth, you know. But like, you know, when they're a fixture in our offices, like everybody sees them, they're right at the entry on the end of the building. So everybody sees them every morning, you know, whether you can get close, that's the trick. But yeah, they were back in a matter of days. And after that, the year after that, they had four babies at one time, which is really rare because owls usually have two or three.
Wow.
And so that year they had four, and then we had three this year. So...
Wow. So can I ask you how that works with, because I know he sells different things, or I mean, I don't even know how it works. What, some people get orgone devices, some are tower busters or pipes, or do you make your own? How does that work? If you don't mind me asking.
No, I don't mind asking at all. I always use the wrong terminology.
It's okay.
And so
I probably do too.
Yeah. We're not supposed to say busting, we're supposed to say gifting and all that kind of stuff, which there is a thought to that. And he's right that you should gift those because you are working with it.
Yeah.
You know, you're not fighting against it. You're working with it.
Yeah.
But anyway, he makes these things called earth pipes, and they're, I don't know, a foot long, and it's just either a copper or aluminum cylinder, something that'll conduct the orgone into the ground, or just connect with the ground to the source or whatever. So he does a resin with crystal and a stacking of copper, and then organic, inorganic, I think is how it goes. It seems like a weird formula that doesn't make sense, but those things, and here's how I know that, and I'll get to these things.
Yes, yes, please. I can't wait.
which I think these are orgone. So you put these orgone generators is essentially what they are. They're generating orgone through you putting it into the ground, right?
Wow.
So I put those pipes, you just kind of, you find a spot that is, I do it intuitively. So I kind of walk it and see where the best places would do that.
Do you douse? Or do you just, use yourself to douse?
I do, okay.
Okay, oh my gosh, I want to know more.
So,
good question, Jeremy.
Here's the trick is you don't even need dowsing rods to douse.
Okay. Yeah, you can use anything, I've heard. You can use anything, right?
You can use stick, a Y-shaped stick. But I use my hands.
Okay.
And I've been learning how to do that. And that's how I find all these things.
Yeah.
So these are
Gordy's balls.
They've been known colloquially in the groups as Gordy's balls, but they are either shaman stones or Moki marbles or So there's a male and a female to these stones. And when you look them up in geology sites, they're a mix of iron and sandstone. And the sandstone out here, you know, has a lot of quartz in it. And so I think the iron and sandstone and the quartz have kind of given them a rhythm, mm-hmm. right? So when you hold them near or close to each other, you can kind of start to feel a resistance. Like I feel it pushing back, but at a certain point they're just pushing now. But they will have here we go. Wait, I can feel it. They'll start to shake. And they have each pair has a little bit different rhythm. You probably can't see it well. Let's see if I can try a different pair. But at any rate, I started finding these in the desert as I was doing my walks around the desert. And they come from any size from like these or these tiny ones to these massive things.
And they're different colors as well. I think you had some white ones as well.
Yeah, the white ones are weird. I don't even know what these are. Honestly, I'm still trying to figure out what these ones are. I think they're limestone. And they're in weird, a little bit weird shapes, but they're always round. They're almost like you could think that that's a man-made marble.
That's beautiful.
Limestone. Oh, I just said, could it be? Maybe they are.
Yeah.
From a past civilization or something, you know, who knows?
You know, we've definitely speculated about that because I almost wonder if these were like a grinding medium because the building that we're at used to be a mining company and they used to do forging and soil test samples. And so I've got some of these stone samples that they used to use that they're all over the place out there. But, I often think I wonder if these are like just metal grinding material that have been rolling around in that wash out there for God knows how long. Cause that the mining out here has been since the 1800s. So, but that where I find these is interesting because the wash will go during the monsoons will go one way, but during the rest of the season, it goes the other way.
Oh, wow.
So there's an interesting thing I think happening in that wash, which is tons of acacia trees, by the way, which is another mystic kind of sink thing because acacia is one of the plants where DMT occurs naturally.
Oh, wow.
Which I didn't know until recently, and it kind of makes a bit, very big, like certain experiences I've had under that tree. Okay, that could have been that, you know.
Okay.
But one of the things that the Mystic Bible talks about is the shabd and everything, how everything has a harmony or everything is a vibration and everything is a sound. And he calls it the creation or the source sound current, which everything will return to and everything has come from. Mm. So he calls the shabd the logos, the word that created creation, you know. But in that, I've kind of found this idea that if everything is vibration, there's your orgone right there. Us putting the intention of actually making the thing and putting it in the ground. It's a ritual. We're doing a magic that we are doing with nature, and it's responding. So whatever the formula or whatever you want to call it, it works.
Yeah.
That's the point. And I try to be as intuitive as possible with it, which is how I found all these weird rocks and stuff out there. But the cool thing about these rocks that I found is that we're doing meditations with them. And people are using them
during meditation.
During meditation, and kind of feeling, it's kind of a grounding thing. And I send them to people. I will send them to both of you. I have tons of them.
Yeah.
Give me your send me your addresses after this, and I will send you both some. But you know, keeping them in your hands and just kind of allowing it to kind of settle you, you know, that it is a grounding, because these things have been, if there's an orgone, these things are loaded with it because they've been sitting in that wash being run by the water of the desert, and then dried out and then run by the water both ways, not just one way like a normal stream would, but both ways. Wow. In this wash. And there's a word he uses in Mystic Bible, and I can't remember what it is, but it talks about the being the connection between the land and the water on a beach. So as the waves roll up, you're not the land. Don't be the land and don't be the water. Be the in-between, the rolling sands that are changing and evolving with it is how we grow, right?
Yeah.
And how you don't get destroyed. That's how you become strong, right? We bust down our muscles to build them back up, right? Because we didn't cut our arm off. We broke down the muscle within the arm to build it back up. So I think these are kind of doing that. I think they're building up energy in the desert, and we can feel them. So going back to the dowsing thing, is that I kind of found this trick. Once I started finding them, I have big boxes of them now. I have a quick
question. Was it someone in your group who said that we, like, what if I could say, like, I am the orgone device?
Yeah.
Like,
I say that all the time. You are the orgone device. Yeah. You are the accumulator.
Yeah, then it was you. I think it was you who said that.
But I've got boxes of them. Now, it takes a little bit of time to
identify, suss out
the males to the females, because you just find them randomly out in the desert. But ones that are a little more smooth, I mean, they kind of all look like different planets too.
Ooh, we have to send him that video of that guy in Sedona that had that. He said it was a meteor. Remember that old guy that was a miner?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll send you the little video of, I wonder what that was,
that's
Brandon.
What I'm saying. Yeah.
So when we were in Sedona, we went to this rock store, and we were like, it was almost closing time. And one of the girls that was working there, her dad came in, and he was like going to pick her up from after work, right? But he was just chatting with people who were in there and stuff, and he was like all excited and talking to people and saying, oh, I'm a, you know, what did he say, I'm a geologist, or
I'm a miner.
Oh, he was a miner,
and he looked like a miner. Like, he looked, he had the outfit on, like suspenders, like he looked like
a hat with the top pulled up and a bandana, and
that's like everything. If you took the hat off, everything else, like, he it looked just like him. Like, he looked like he stepped out of the 1800s, and he had this stone with him that he said he found while he was mining one time, and he said it was a meteor or whatever, and it looked like it had intricate patterns that were like trees and stuff on it. It was amazing.
Interesting.
It was very interesting.
That's cool. Now, I have an interesting idea that Cheney and I have been talking about, that things aren't like we always kind of put them in geometric patterns. Like we see geometric patterns in nature all the time. But we were talking about in one of the groups, it might have been on the spiders. We were talking about being hit by lightning and how being hit by lightning leaves a pattern on your skin of that looks like lightning. It's crazy. Like you see those videos of guys that do woodworking and they'll put a positive on one side of a piece of wood and a negative on the other side. And it burns a path between them. And it looks like lightning, right?
Yeah.
Which also looks like
trees. Or a tree.
If you look at a tree. So if you look at, what are they called? They're called pixies, I think. Pixie lightning. Sprites.
Sprites, yes.
So space sprites is lightning, space lightning, right? When they've taken pictures of sprites in actually happening, it goes both points. It goes up and down, but it goes down in a different way that's like softer and more
diffused. Maybe?
Diffused, and then on top it's like real jaggedy, but it's the same shape. Like whatever shape, it'll be the same.
Oh wow!
On top and bottom, which is really interesting. But I almost think that lightning is more, you know, lightning reflects trees and our veins. Our veins look the same.
Yeah.
You know,
it's nature.
And, you know, Brandon, you were talking about fractals. Like if you've ever watched a Mandelbrot set animated, you know that it's never going to end, right? So those connections are just patterns repeating themselves, but different every single time, right? So whatever we've experienced, we're going to experience those things probably again. And we've probably done it before. But, you know, at the beginning of 2019, at the end of 2019, when the bullshit started really getting big, you know, I think a lot of us were depressed. You know, we saw this as, oh my God, it's the end. And I really have a gratitude, I think, now for it because of that we do have more of a fractal linear understanding that these bodies, the bodies are temporary. You know, our ancestors had the term memento mori for a reason. You know, and they would say it would be on all of their people had it on all their architecture and all their tombstones. Memento mori, memento mori. Remember your death. And it's because this, you know, they didn't have long lifespans in the 1400s. You know, they had to realize that, you know, we got a really short time here. And what we do here affects what happens, you know, later on. But I think it's not something we teach our kids. We don't teach them that they're infinite beings.
No.
No, most people are afraid of death, really. They fear it.
But it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Totally. It's just going to keep going on in some form or another.
Yeah.
So freedom, you know, I think it's freedom. Just knowing that. And it puts a lot of other stuff together, you know, like it's okay. You're going to be okay. Whatever happens, this is your path. And I guess, you know, a Microsoft mogul can go to heaven. Maybe. I don't know. You know, I don't know. That's a question that I don't think anybody's asking. You know, I mean, at least not in our circles. Like, we needed that guy. We needed that asshole to bring us down.
To wake us up.
You know, we've demonized over history. They've demonized Judas. But Jesus' sacrifice wouldn't have happened without a Judas selling him out to the Romans. They should have been thanking him. Instead, he died in shame with his guts blown all over the rocks, supposedly, that he hung himself, right? Which I think is also a story. But
right. It doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense.
It never
whatsoever.
Made any sense to me.
I'm just saying, we needed a Judas. Judas, you know, Jesus kissed Judas on the mouth. You know, he was that, they were that close that and there were several references that Judas was his favorite.
Interesting.
Or maybe he was the only one he could trust to be balls enough to go through with it. You know, that guy should have been a hero. But no, the church has taught us something else. I mean, if you want to play their savior game.
Exactly.
Which
exactly.
I don't think you need personally. Right. You have a direct connection to the divine anyway.
Right.
So just go get it.
Save yourself.
Save
Didn't
yourself.
Jesus say that?
Exactly. And Jesus said, do you not know that you are gods? You are a little g god because you're part of the infinite of the whole. And the New Agers and simulation people like to throw around the holographic nature kind of idea, which is totally works. It totally works. Everything that's in the smallest information packet of that hologram is the same that's in the giant one. So if we are part of the infinite, that means we are gods too.
Yeah. Could it be? Isn't it the law of one that says we are God experiencing itself?
Right.
So it's God broke itself into, you know, billions of pieces in order to experience itself in as many ways and aspects as possible. So some people will choose to go polarize negative and some will choose to polarize positive, but it's not for us to judge the ones who are polarizing negative because they're doing that for a purpose, for a reason, because we're God experiencing itself. So they're going to play their part. They're going to play their role in this lifetime. And who knows, next lifetime, they may play a different role. But, you know, and we won't remember, but that's okay.
And we see ourselves as separate.
Yeah.
That we're not the same because we have these meat suits that we think that this is where our consciousness is. That our body is right here.
Yeah.
Our body is out here.
Yeah, yeah.
And because
reminds me of the tuning forks.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's there's the shabd again, the harmony, you know, the vibration. Yeah. Because we are putting out a vibration, an energy that is connecting to the next person who is connecting to the next person. So I always thought of that there was this like net over the earth, like being pointed up to each person's energy. That the net over all of humanity that we can connect to, you know, our ancestors, or, you know, that is sits outside of time and space. And if that's the case, because we know that remote healing works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And why does that work? It's because there is no such thing as time and space once that energy exactly. is out there. And we need to stop seeing ourselves as separate individuals. I mean, we are, and we need to treat ourselves as individuals, but appreciate ourselves for individuals. You appreciate ourselves, I can appreciate you.
Yeah, that reminds me. Have you heard of the net of Indra concept in Hinduism?
I've heard of it. Tell me about it.
Basically, to break it down really easily, it's just that there's Indra, a deity in Hinduism, has this giant net. And every person is on the net, and what we're all spaced apart a certain amount, and then we could turn our own light on. And when we turn our light on, which is like kind of wake up and become enlightened or whatever it is, then people around us can see that, and then they could turn their lights on too. So we're all connected in this way. So it really reminded me what you said of that concept.
Makes sense to me.
What it reminded me of when you were talking about that concept is like if you imagine that for us, I guess human is like the word you can use, but I don't like that word. But I imagined it also like the trees and the mycelium and the roots and how they're all connected and they talk to each other. And it's like, they know they're connected, but we don't, you know, it's crazy.
We don't even think they have consciousness. Mushrooms have a proven conscious, plants have a proven consciousness.
Yes.
Yep.
And rocks tick. They're alive. They're clocks. Oh,
these suckers tick. these definitely tick. Like there is a vibration in the, let me see if I can get it to do it. I hope. Oh wait. Okay. Sometimes it'll like spin in a different way. I don't know if it depends on what's in, you know, here's another thing. Is
when they're being watched. I'm just kidding.
Well, no, that might be the thing. Is, I mean, you could say these are just rocks and they're just an inanimate object and they don't do anything unless I do it with them, which is true. You know, nothing is really happening unless I'm holding them and touching them, right? But you can, there it goes. You're not going to be able to see it on camera, but there's a, yeah. Kind of
slight rhythm. Vibration, yeah.
That's a little vibration, but we know quartz does that.
Yeah, because that's why they use them in clocks. I mean, in, right. In timepieces, mm-hmm. In computers.
That's, yeah, right. What you were saying earlier about the lightning and stuff, and then I was thinking about vibration, where lightning is just energy in a different form, and it's just quick and it's fast, right. But it causes the same thing. And then our energy, like the veins and stuff, they grow in a similar pattern. It's just slower, just like trees and whatever. It's just going to the same universal vibration.
Yeah, man. It's see, where was he? Oh, I know where I was going to go with this. So the dowsing thing.
Okay. Yeah.
I was taught by a friend, my Sunday school teacher, in fact, from high school.
Wow.
He had a little spread near Florence, and we would go out there, and he puts two rods in my hand, and he goes, points out into the desert. He's like, okay, just walk straight that way. And every time the rods cross, you stop and look down. Just walk straight, and just when they cross, stop. And I did, and they crossed. I looked down, and there's a red flag. I'm like, what? Interesting. He goes, keep going. And I do it again, and it does it. And there's another flag. I'm like, what the heck's going on? They were drilling. They were going to drill a well. And they had figured it. They had gotten somebody who was, I mean, a water witch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which anybody can do this.
Yeah.
And he doused for those spots to actually see to find out where the piping was. So they found out where the pipe was, mapped it all out, and they did it all with dowsing. So I knew it worked.
Yeah.
Way back in the 90s.
Nice.
And so I've done a little dowsing, but so here's the thing is Lindsay took me to one of these Tao healing sessions things. And I noticed the Tao healers were doing this thing with a kind of a cupping. They kind of hold the energy here, which makes sense if you do some Qigong or
Qigong. It looks very Qigong or Tai Chi.
Right. Yeah. So she was, I noticed she was like shaking her hand, kind of like cupping the energy and like kind of letting it rock. And I realized, I was like, oh man, I think I can do that. And you can feel a different energy. So I started doing this. I would meditate under the tree before I go search for rocks, right? Mm-hmm. I'd ask them, ask the stones to find me. And I would walk around the desert just kind of allowing to do this. And I found all these crazy bunches of
them. All the ones in your box.
All the ones in the boxes, yeah.
Wow. And the ones you've given away.
Yes, I've given away a few, which is really cool to see people, you know, in other parts of the world actually starting to have them. So, and my idea, I mean, if I were to, because this is what we do, we think of the crazy and then work our way back, you know, aim high, right? If we could use these and kind of train ourselves that we could meditate together on these things, you know, oh, there it goes. Here we go.
Oh.
Here it goes. But there's definitely an energy. If we could, we can like teach ourselves to connect. Like we know that we can connect in our dreams, right? I don't know if you guys have ever had that where you've actually interacted with somebody that you knew in real life in your dreams and went, hey, like this happens with the spiders a lot. Wow. Like, dude, Gabe, you were in my dream last night and we were around the circle. And he's like, yeah, dude, me too.
Wow.
You know, if that is possible,
wow,
then can we control it? You know, if we are able to meditate all at the same time with these stones, maybe we could, Jim calls it, what did he call it? Psychic walkie-talkies. That we could, that we can maybe
telepathy
be able to, right, exactly. My thought is, you know, just like the dowsing, you know, because all you need is two copper pipes and it works, or copper rods and it works, but also you don't need the copper rods.
Right.
Maybe these are also Dumbo's feather, you know?
Yes.
Where, Dumbo's feather. You know, the, so
it's
the
all
analogy,
Dumbo's feather.
It's all Dumbo's feather, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't need,
You are Dumbo's feather.
You are Dumbo. You are the magic. You're the flying elephant.
Yes.
You can do whatever.
They act as, I guess you could say, conduits for your belief for it to work.
Right. Even if it's just that, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if it's just me doing, me in my head making that vibration, which I know it's not me because I've put them in a lot of people's hands. So I know they're feeling different
the
things
energy,
too,
right.
The energy. Yeah. So, and I believe that if we can imbue those things with even more, like doing blue moon ceremonies on them and stuff like that, I think we can imbue them with more of that orgone or chi, or it's all the same thing. Ether, orgone, chi, energy. It's all the same thing. It's all. And there's negative to that too. They call it Mitch called it bad orgone energy, or I can't remember what his acronym is for it. But I guess William Reich, who is the originator of orgone, yeah, had written about that kind of stuff. That there's a good and bad energy, and you just manipulate the energy.
Hmm.
Bring your good.
Yeah.
The more good we put out, the more good we get back. That's the reflection, because nature is a reflection, or we are, if we're in our natural state, we are a reflection of it, right? So if we're in that natural state, it's just going to flow.
Yeah. I love it. It also reminded me of, like, Brandon and I have talked about this, but like a placebo works because of belief. You believing it will work. And some people need a little something to help them. So like, that's where homeopathic remedies come in and things like that, because they need that little thing to say, this is what's going to do it for me. This is what's going to help me. But then some people just can say, you know, I don't need Dumbo's feather. I'm healed.
That's right. And that's a gnosis. It's not belief. Once you've actually done it, you're like, oh, this is how it works. I don't even have to question it.
It's a knowing.
Because belief requires you have to like convince yourself of something, right? If you always knew this, and it's something you just forgot, you just have to remember it. You just do.
Yeah.
And Brandon, all sorts of healings happen.
Yeah.
Miracles can happen.
Oh, yeah. I believe it. Yeah, in a past, like, I don't remember how early on in the episodes it was, but we've been going for a year. I think this is like really close to our 1 year episode mark time frame. But we talked about what knowing really is, and knowing really means experience. It means having experienced something. So that's why when Adam knew his wife, he experienced her. You can't know something without experiencing it. But I don't remember how that ties into belief. I've forgotten.
I was thinking that too, though. I think because he was saying belief and knowing, I was thinking that Adam knew Eve. That's our definition. Yeah.
Yeah. Once you've experienced, once you've kind of gone through something and came out the other side, mm-hmm. you know, you really know,
you know,
yeah. And all sorts of things can open up to you. You just know.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. And it's funny. Jason from Archaics, the way he believes we live in a simulacrum, he calls it. And he says that it responds to, you know, you can't just sit around like they tell you in The Secret and just like wish and hope for it. He said your action is also required. So this could be part of that too. Who knows if it's, you know, who knows what's doing what? Is it the dog wagging the tail or the tail wagging the dog? You know what I'm saying? Like when it comes to the spiritual realm. So these talisman that we use, these conduits and stuff, they could be a signifier to this realm to give us what we need also on that end. So I mean, however it works, I know it works. We've all seen it. I mean, you cured yourself, you lost a bunch of weight and all this stuff because of it. So yeah, I mean, I think it's amazing.
That's interesting you brought up simulacrum. Have you ever heard of the idea of biocentrism?
I'm not sure.
So there's a Dr. Robert Lanza. I think he's got three books on it out now, but he has this idea, and it's not new. It's based on ancient ideas too, the idea of simulation, that everything is consciousness, that everything, nothing actually happens unless it happens in here.
Mentalism?
Well, I mean, yeah. If you're the creator, you are the creator. It's not happening until you've actually experienced it, right? So you don't know that a thing is a thing until you've actually done the thing. You really don't know. You can know.
Like
you can be told or hear about it, but you really didn't know until you actually did the thing. So, which tells us that the double slit experiment. Do you guys know about this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the double slit experiment is a thing that it was laser shot through a panel, and it would change with the observer. It was a proof of observation change, right?
Yeah.
And it's repeatable. They've done it over and over and over again. That a thing happens, something different happens when somebody's observing it. And it happens every single time. In fact, that's the problem with scientific method, is that you can't observe the thing and not affect it.
I love it.
It's just, it's impossible to do. You can't take yourself out of the actual experience.
Equation. Yeah.
Exactly. We have to be measuring it. That's why, you know, they're looking for a result. They're going to get it.
Yeah.
One way or another, they're going to get it, because either their will is making it happen, or they're just keep doing it until they get what they came for. You know what I mean?
Jason of Archaics talks about that. You create it. You basically, if what you want to see, you will see.
Uh-huh. That's absolutely true.
Yeah. It goes back.
If you want to see Titans in the ocean, you're probably going to see them.
Yeah, it goes back to, if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there, does it actually make a sound?
Right. That's where it starts, right? That's the idea, is does it actually happen if you didn't know about it? Like, Exactly. The whole idea in our communities where the flat earth and space is fake or whatever, like, you really don't know. Any of us don't know, but it's probably both. Or neither, or all of it.
Or more spiritual, too.
Totally more.
Yeah.
100% more.
Yeah, I think that flat earth is another psyop to make people think this is a material realm.
Agreed. It's to keep us in our flesh. Bullshit, man.
Yeah.
I'm not playing that game.
Yeah, they're onto something, but keep going.
They're onto something.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Gordy, I think it's been a couple of hours.
Yeah.
That was quick. That was a quick couple hours, man.
Right? Hey,
you want to go seven?
Shall we go
those set spiders to shame? No, I don't think I have it at me tonight. I do appreciate you guys having me on, man.
Oh, this is a fun conversation. Absolutely loved it.
Great. This is a great conversation. I had no idea what to expect, but I really was blown away. So thank you. This was really great. I think it's great to hear from people who are like us, and a lot of people that watch the show watch it because of the way Sharon and I are, because we don't make claims. We're always questioning things because we really don't know what it is. We might have an idea, and we're always pointing people to that. You know, you don't know. And then we're also always trying to get out of victim consciousness, which I'm very excited about. It's like,
yeah, for
we're
sure.
We're not victims, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Brandon's knowing is different from the Gordy's knowing, different from the Sharon's knowing.
Yeah.
And that has to be okay.
Yeah.
See, that's the middle pillar.
It's totally okay.
That's the thing about, I'm getting comfortable with mysticism now, calling myself a mystic. I hate labels.
Yeah.
I really hate them. I hate them with a passion.
Right there with you.
And I hate this word alchemy too, because it's misused, but mystic, I will take that one, because I mean, we have to be comfortable with the mystery. Like, if you're not looking at the mystery, you're missing the whole thing. Like, you're just looking at matter of how this thing reacts with this thing, and you're trusting some dipshit to tell you what to do. Like, they have no idea what it works for you, man. Only you know what works for you. So you,
I like mystic.
You better go work it out for yourself. So anyway, I'm good with that.
So I like mystic too. It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's go ahead. It's open. I'm open to all things, you know?
Yeah. I think if you're able to accept the mystery and you're open to it, and this is something I learned from Michael Tesserian also years ago, and it really helped a lot. It's like, you're never going to know. You just accept the fact that certain things are a mystery, and then you just move on. Or, you know, you look at the mystery and ponder it and talk about it. But you don't have to fight about it. You don't have to draw a line in the sand. And then, you know, I'm sure people get together and they could just have a fight all day online and podcasts and debate and argue. But I think it's more valuable to talk about what we have in common. And this is something, this has been a thread of the Oversharon Show for a while. We even did an episode, if you go back to episode 11 and 11:11, we talked all about division and what really matters about another person's belief system and prioritizing their beliefs. Like, if they think we live on a spinning ball or in a flat earth or whatever it is, does that really matter? Or does it matter what's their behavior like, you know? Like,
exactly. Well, see, and this is the problem I have with the word alchemy. I mean, alchemy is just transformation, really. But, and you can do stuff in a lab and make all these magic potions and do some pretty cool stuff. But if you didn't change yourself, what good is it?
Yep.
What's your point? If you didn't improve yourself to improve the rest of the world. One thing that I love about the spiders community is that we have kind of a yes and policy with whatever we talk about, because everybody's opinion is valid, or everybody's point that they bring into it is valid. Mm-hmm. So we don't debate. We have a discussion.
I love that.
And it's been beautiful so far. There's been a few, you know, people coming in sometimes wanting to, you know, show a cert,
Assertiveness?
Assertiveness, yeah. That want to come in swinging their intellectual dicks around, and I'm like, no, dude, you're in the wrong spot. But
wrong saloon.
Exactly. But we're
sayonara.
These guys are, I mean, the core group that we have is amazing. There's awesome. Just lovely people that we've found, you know. So anyway, check out Weaving Spiders Welcome. It's actually on Weaving Spiders Web's channel now, because we had to change it from getting
on too much attention. YouTube?
That's on YouTube. There is a podcast. I'm not sure how much that's getting updated now, because we're all kind of just show up on Saturday and then put it out, like let it kind of breathe and see what happens. Also, there's the one I do with Chance and Gabe on the Marvelous Demystifiers, which we do Marvel movies and we tear down their symbology and maybe some of the stuff that they're trying to tell us, code into us in those things, even how they've manipulated mythologies and that kind of thing. So there's Marvelous Demystifiers. What else do I do? Oh, Secrets of the Stones. That's my meditation group with that. Culinary Alchemy is a group I have where we share recipes of, you know, eating well.
Oh.
And then I have the main group, which is the Mystic Inheritance Conspiratorium, where we do the books.
These were Telegram groups you were talking about.
These are all Telegram groups, yeah. Oh, but the main one is my Instagram, Gordy_2Shoes. Gordy_2_Shoes.
Okay.
That's it.
And you spell out 2, T-W-O.
Yes, correct. And that's Gordy with a Y.
I'm sure the lovely Sharon will put links to all that stuff below.
Yes, I'll get them for you.
She's awesome.
Sweet.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I'd like to give a shout out to the chat. We premiere these episodes every Thursday night at 8:33 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So if you'd like to come hang out in the live chat with us, we're always in there and we're always having a good time. We have a good group of people in there. And, you know, it's always fun. There's nobody that's ever like spiraling. And if they are, we haven't had to yet, but we'll ban them in a second. We have no fear of that.
Give all your best people administrative wrench.
Oh yeah,
take care of it.
Oh yeah, yeah,
we're full of wrenches.
Wrench crew, exactly.
Yeah,
crew.
That's what we did. And so, big shout out to the chat. Thank you guys so much for hanging out to the end of this episode. If you'd like to support us, you can go to our website, morelawsmoreproblems.com. Click on the oversharing tab, and there's plenty of ways to support us. And like we always say, the best way to support is to just comment on this, leave questions, let us know how we're doing, and show up in the chat every Thursday night or whenever you can, because that's really what we love is when people interact. And it's like really my favorite night of the week is Thursday night when we premiere these things. So thank you again, Gordy, for coming on. It's really been a wonderful conversation. I can't wait to go back and rewatch this again.
Yeah,
so,
me too. Yeah.
Anything else, Sharon?
I think that's it. I thought I had a question, but I don't remember it. So,
well, then we can continue it next time.
Exactly.
Any of you are welcome to show up in any of my groups, and I will pop into yours sometimes.
Sweet.
And thanks, Sharon and Brandon. It's good to meet you, sir. Thank you for doing this. This is fun.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. All right, Sharon, what do we say to the good people?
But if you're not oversharing,
then you're totally not caring.
That's right.
So share and share on. We'll see you guys next week. Later.